Oh. Well, there was no audio on that.
I heard it.
Oh, did you?
I heard it. I don't know if you knew that it was
I couldn't hear it.
It's still going, well, actually. There you go.
It's still going? Yeah. All right. Well, let's end that. okay. What's... I couldn't hear it, so I'm like, is it going? Is it not going?
Oh, man. What is up, Nerf Herders? Welcome back to the Nap for episode 4. Episode 4 of season 3. We are in the season 3 era, and things are looking pretty. Josh, how are we doing today?
We're doing, man. We're doing. I had an interesting day today. How was your day?
Boring. And all hell. You know what? It's so I go on vacation on Friday. Like we're actually gonna start our trip on Friday. And so
good for you.
I have every prediction that this is gonna be the slowest fucking week of my entire life.
Of course.
Without a doubt.
Of course.
So yeah. Got the trip all planned out. Like hotel and campsite reservations have been made. Everything's in place. We confirmed that everywhere that we want to go is open during these COVID times. I've got a huge bag. It's got like hand sanitizer. It's got gloves and masks just in case.
Nice.
The one item that I didn't think I would ever have to take on a camping trip is face masks. A bag full of face mask gloves and all that stuff. But I mean, that's the world we're in. We're specifically avoiding any like major populated areas. We passed through Rapid City, South Dakota for one night, and that's pretty much it. And we're gonna stay there. But other than that, we didn't want to stay in like hotels or anything like that, so we're camping, which I think would make it easier to keep social distancing in place. And like I said, we've got masks that we'll be wearing pretty much everywhere else. So I mean, we're going into some national parks, so without a doubt, I'm sure there's going to be some people around. And I think even with us being outside, I think it's still pretty important that we wear a mask just to stay safe, because I don't want to bring COVID home with us.
Right. So we're gonna both be camping this weekend then. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll be back. I don't know. Maybe we'll do an episode when I get back, because I'll be back on the 20th. Let's see. Oh, we'll be back on the 20th.
Okay, so we're kind of taking a little break here.
I don't know. Maybe we'll get some like video content ahead of time. I'm gonna try and finish my Fallen Order series, so I can have the remainder of those videos up before I go, and I'll have those scheduled out to where there's still gonna be some more YouTube content. But I don't know. Yeah, okay. A couple nights off, let you catch up on some anime, because so far people have been eating that series up. Which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I got an email today, man, from New York Comic Con.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Interest has peaked.
They've been radio silent since March.
Yeah.
Okay. I reached out to my guest. Well, they haven't been socially. They've been sharing things on social, but they haven't released tickets yet. And I haven't heard from my individual sales rep for a while. And I've been reaching out like every couple of weeks, like, hey, what's up? Where are we at? Is it going? Is it not going? And then so I get an email today, not from him, but from the accounting department saying, hey, your invoice hasn't been paid yet. Are you still planning on attending 2020? And I was like, what? So I looked back at my emails. I had no emails. So I called up the accounting person. And I'm like, hey, this is the first I'm hearing about this. Not to say this isn't great, but I have no previous email from you that has any invoice. So thanks for sending that, for one. And two, are you still planning on having this? And they said, yeah, for all purposes, we intend to have New York Comic Con on October 8th. And I said, how? And they said, well, we'll have more details soon, but we plan to have an event, and we're going to ensure that it's safe for all of our attendees and our vendors. And again, I just wanted to say how, but I could tell that she wasn't the person to answer that. It's a lot of money for me to drop, man. And I'm like, so if you guys cancel, what's going to happen with the money? And they're like, we'll roll it over the next year. But I mean, it's not just that. Like, That's fine by me because I need to secure my place in line. If you fall off the roster, you don't get back on that roster. Sure. It's a very exclusive roster.
Yep.
And I don't want to lose my spot. However, so that's fine. If I pay the invoice and then they roll it over to 2021 and I'm secure, that's fine by me. But then, you know, am I going to have that easy of a time rolling over my flights and finding, you know, a place to stay and everything? That's kind of what's in my head now. Okay. So I honestly was not expecting that at all. I mean, I figured it's June. This ain't happening. But
my mind is kind of blown that they're still doing it. And I mean, it's October. Like, yeah. I mean, enough time has gone by at that point. I mean, stuff has been opening back up. We have been seeing some increases in cases, but not to the level where it's been overwhelming medical staff or anything like that. So, I mean, and I could be wrong about that as far as other countries go, but as far as like here in the States, stories about medical staff, and also to be fair, there's been some other stuff in the news recently, but, as far as COVID overwhelming, medical staff and people in general in the country, that news is not completely gone away, but it's certainly not nearly as rough as it was. So I can see them wanting to hold it. I feel like every female cosplayer or every cosplayer out there is going to be dressed as like Katana or Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat.
I know. Darth Vader, anything with a mask.
I don't know. That's some inside scoop shit. I don't even think social media has been,
I mean, they've been posting some things, but they still haven't posted tickets yet. The last thing they've ever said about tickets is early summer. Well, it's June. It's June 8th. So what qualifies as early? I think it's midsummer now, technically.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I mean.
So yeah, right now their website, thank you for making New York Comic Con 2019 the best one yet. Save the date for 2020, October 8th through 11th. They have a countdown timer there, and let's see.
I mean, that hasn't changed since last year, so yeah.
Buy badges.
But they haven't been really making a lot of guest announcements or anything like that. And I mean, look, I want to be optimistic because I haven't been to any shows this year, and I think if I can go to this show, I could probably make a lot of money. However, New York Comic Con is over 100,000 people that go to this thing. And in the last couple years, it wasn't just Saturday that was packed. It was every single day. You couldn't walk a foot without bumping into five other people. How are they going to do that, man? I mean,
I don't know, man.
Are they going to limit how many people go inside? And then if that's the case, is it even worth, because they're charging full price for the vendors, you know, I'll be really interested to see. I'm not trying to talk bad about New York Comic Con. I'm just blown away right now. So I'll be interested to see what happens.
I hadn't even been looking into it because I assumed that it was going to get postponed. Like pretty much all the other events out there. And just kind of looking at their, scrolling through their Twitter feed here real quick. There's not really any news It's just been in a holding pattern for so long. It has the date, but that's it. Dude, I might go just out of the interest to see how they handle it.
Right. Josh says, yeet. What's up? And Chris says, where are you going? Oh, he must have been talking about either New York Comic Con or where are you going camping, one of the two.
Yeah. I'm going to Yellowstone. Nice. So we're going to cut through Yellowstone, Badlands.
No volcanoes in Yellowstone with all the,
Oh dude, man, that meme had been getting passed around activity. Like crazy. There were like 70 some, earthquakes in the last 24 hours. And seriously, like the first result, I just typed into Google earthquakes in Yellowstone. And the first result came up was that there is an average of 3,000 earthquakes per year at Yellowstone.
It's nothing new.
Yeah, no, like this story comes up just about every single year that Yellowstone's going to erupt and kill everybody, which first of all, good on it because I mean, Corona didn't wipe out quite as many people as I think Dwight Schrute would be happy about, but come on.
Yeah.
It's like, we need, well, there's too many people on this planet. We need a new plague. But
it's the same thing as the Killer Hornets story.
I haven't heard anything about that recently now either.
Yeah, it was just people searching for any kind of other news that would go viral. And right now, just anything that could go viral will go viral. Yes. Killer Hornets, which don't kill humans, they kill other bees, went viral for all of about 5 seconds. And so, yeah, then Yellowstone did. And I'm sure Kevin Costner and his crew was like, damn it, because Yellowstone, the show, is about to launch like this week or next week, the third season. And they're like, come on, stop giving us a bad name. But
I was doing some video checks, and it happened to be on the Paramount Network, and I swear I saw a commercial for Yellowstone like every other day. And there's a particular line that as soon as I heard it, I knew I didn't want to watch this show. Have you watched the show? Am I dogging on or anything like that right now?
Yes, we've watched it religiously, but go on. Okay.
There's a single line is from the commercial. It said, it's like, you're the trailer park, I'm the tornado. And I'm just like, you know what? Done. I don't care about this show anymore. That was the stupidest.
Is it a girl saying it?
Yeah, some blonde chick.
She is a bit much in the show. it's on purpose.
As soon as I heard that, I'm like, nope.
She is the crazy, drunk, like, heiress that you don't want to mess with. And I know it's a corny line, but she is a force to be reckoned with on this show.
I don't know.
So
I'll have to check it out at some point, because I don't know. I don't know why Kevin Costner is just like, he's so hit and miss with me. But even when he misses, it's still kind of hilarious.
Dude, I am right on there with you. I was not really caring to watch the show. However, the person that is the showrunner for this show is the writer of a few of my favorite films, and I'm all of a sudden blanking out on it. Denise Villeneuve directed one of them. I'm just gonna look it up right quick. Yellowstone. And so the first season, he wrote and directed it, and now he's just the showrunner. And it was a great season. What is his name? Dang it. Taylor Sheridan is the showrunner. And he wrote Wind River. He wrote Hell or High Water. He wrote Sicario and Sicario Deus Soldado. So he is a fantastic writer. He knows drama and tension really well. And as much as I didn't think the trailers were that great, the show is great. A lot of border tensions between, you know, cowboys and modern day reservations. And then, you know, casinos, and there's a lot of craziness going on there, but it's written really well. And I ate it up. My wife and I binged the first two seasons, and we've been waiting for season three. So, yeah.
No, I
it's worth the watch.
I didn't know anything about it until I saw the until I saw the commercials, because I don't watch cable TV, and I guess that show, as far as like the Facebook algorithm and ads and stuff like that that I see on the internet, just didn't think of me as their target market, which after seeing that ad and hearing that line, I was just like, yeah, I probably not, probably not the biggest, they probably weren't that far off, with their guess.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. People, if you've watched the channel, if you've listened to the podcast, you know that I am probably one of the last people to keep up on a lot of different content. Like, I'm just now caught up to the newest season of Clone Wars, which we're going to talk about season six today.
Finally.
Even when the Marvel movies were coming out, until like the last ones. The most recent ones, I was actually seeing them as soon as possible. But I think all the way up until, I think between, like, I want to say between Age of Ultron and Civil War, I was waiting like a week or two to go into the theater just because I didn't want to be around that many people.
Right.
Even when new Netflix shows came out, I mean, aside from Stranger Things, I was like weeks behind. I was like, because I'm always making stuff. Like I'm always out on job or
right.
creating videos or some shit like that. So I'm always super behind.
Right.
But yeah, I'm still blown away that New York Comic Con's still going to go on. I can't get that out of my head. Like I would have thought that they would have canceled it or postponed it a little bit longer. Did they postpone it? Or was like October always the original time?
No, it's always been October 8th. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess they've just been holding out. So
I was like,
well, listen, I know you're on kind of a timer tonight. So let's get through these first couple stories and then we can talk about Clone Wars. Cause I am anxious to talk about Clone Wars.
I know. You. Cause you're super far ahead of me. I know that's kind of been something that's been irritating the living shit out of me lately.
So we cover a lot of things, all things media on this podcast. And, you know, that includes TV and the NFL is a huge part of TV.
Whether you like it or not.
And whether you like it or not. And, you know, we've been talking about what's been going on lately in the news, you know, post the Floyd killing and, you know, the protests and everything that's been going on. And it affected the NFL over the weekend. There was, you know, Drew Brees posted some things about bringing up the whole kneeling with the flag thing again and how that's disrespectful and how, you know, the NFL won't stand for it. And a lot of his teammates came out and said, you're wrong and you're being incredibly ignorant. And then they came together and recorded a video basically demanding that the NFL address this. They said they wanted to hear some exact words from the NFL. And to the NFL's credit, they did put out those exact words. On the 5th, they put out this statement. We, the NFL, condemned racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the NFL, admit we were wrong for not listening to the NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the NFL, believe Black Lives Matter. It's a big statement. And it's not a big statement, depending on how you look at it. It's a big statement for them to make. Apparently, it's big enough for Trump to weigh in because he is not happy about this. He called out Drew Brees, later came back and apologized and said, you know what, I'm choosing to listen to my co-workers and my co-players. And I was wrong. And it's not about the flag. It's about, you know, the issues that are going on. And Trump called him out. And then he clapped back at Trump, but then Trump also called out the NFL for making this statement. And so that's one thing. And some people are praising the NFL for making this statement. Other people are saying, well, you just kind of read the words that these players asked you to read. You didn't really do much on top of that. And then you said we were wrong for not listening to the NFL players earlier. But you failed to mention a very, very specific name when you did that, and that's Colin Kaepernick, who started this and who took the brunt of the repercussions for it and the consequences for it started this.
He took all of it. He took all of the repercussions for that. I mean, first of all, before I say anything, I'm never going to pat the back of an organization. I'm never going to pat somebody's back for saying that they're not racist.
Right.
It's kind of the way you're supposed to be. Like, that's the status quo. Get with the fucking program.
Like, yeah.
And especially the NFL, who have been profiting off of minority culture for a long time. Like, that's not arguable. All right.
It's like
you've had black people
like
in
most
sports
organizations.
Yeah. Like most sports organizations.
Yeah.
It was like, you guys wouldn't have made shit for money if you had only had me in there. sorry, I'm not going to pat your back for finally being like, hey, yeah, we condemn racism. It's like, yeah, everybody does. Everybody should. I can't say everybody does because unfortunately that's not the case. But nobody should. I'm not going to be like, all right, good. Like, I'm really glad for you, NFL. Like, this is really...
Yeah.
I'm really proud of you. No, that's how it was supposed to be from the fucking start.
From the start.
We shouldn't take a protest to, that's the thing that irritates me about this the most, is that it, especially for the people that are coming out of the woodwork and like revealing themselves to be like closeted racists, well, not closeted anymore, but revealing themselves to be racist, or coming around and saying, you like the one that really irritates me is when people are like, you know what, I didn't really see it from their perspective until now. It's like, how?
How?
How'd you not see it? I don't. Yeah, so I can't get behind NFL wanting praise. I can get behind them for finally being like, yeah, we condemn racism, but actions are going to speak louder than words in this scenario. So I really want to see like what they actually do to support these actions, because like you said, the players show, were saying, it's like, yeah, like you said, the players were even saying, it's like, well, you just kind of read words. They need to see that change.
Not to mention we're in the off season here. I mean, you can say a lot of things when
your
camera's not on you.
Your ratings aren't about to dip right now. Because that was another thing that was really infuriating about the whole thing, is that when Kaepernick was kneeling to protest shit that needs to be protested, like, there were people in my social circle who are like, yeah, I'm boycotting the NFL until they can get over this bullshit they're going through right now. It's like, are you fucking serious?
Like, and guess what? And it worked. I mean, it did work. How many times do you hear that? Like, you know, if you want to make change, hurt them where, you know, where the money's at. Hurt them with your wallet.
We've said
it
before.
Enough people were like, we're going to hurt the NFL and boycott them until they force people to stand up. Even though that's the wrong thing to do, but it worked. And they, you know, they made those rules to where if you want to protest, you got to do it in the locker room. You can't be out on the field, you know, and stuff like that, which they have not renounced that yet. They haven't rescinded those rules.
Here. Like we need to see. So it wasn't even the NFL that was really the big culprit here. It was the individual teams, the individual coaches, some team owners who were also coming out and saying, like, yeah, no, we're not going to tolerate this. If you want to stay on this team, you're going to stand. Like, so, yeah.
Not all of them.
Not
most of them.
No. Not all of them. In fact, not even a majority of them were doing that.
Some of the loudest ones were.
Yeah. But that's kind of how a lot of things are, is when somebody's doing something wrong and they're off shouting in the corner, it's normally a vocal minority that's making all that noise when it happens to be pushing for something that's wrong or shitty, often like racism. Thankfully, it's not the majority in that scenario. It's the minority working in the wrong places, like positions of power where being a racist dickhead has the most impact, but still not the most human beings on the planet, thankfully enough. But yeah, actions are going to speak way louder than words are in this scenario. And, it would be nice to see I can't wait until the first game.
They'll say their words and make a monetary contribution to whatever organization they can think of. Oh yeah. They've been doing that.
Yep.
But there won't be a fundamental change. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're all expecting. Yeah.
That's kind of why I'm waiting for the first game. I really want to see the first game and see what exactly.
Well, they're going to have to make announcements before, right? Because they're going to have to either rescind those rules or keep those rules, because they've been threatening to fine people for the last 2 years.
I don't know if they do anything on camera. I don't know that they'll say anything about it until that first game when players do kneel down and make them say something. Because this seems an awful lot like the... I'm going to scratch my back real quick, my handy-dandy back scratcher here. But oftentimes when you see like a corporation in the shit like this, they really just kind of hope to be able to put out an apology and like Doug said, throw some money. Like, if they can throw money at the problem and then hope
just take the target off their back.
Exactly. Get the target off their back, which right now is especially easy for them to do. Because now they've come out and they've said this. Now the attention is going to go to other companies that were also causing this kind of shit to see if they're going to be catching some heat now. And it makes especially good sense to be doing this during the preseason before things really start firing up. Especially when viewership might I would say viewership is going to be higher than it's ever been for the NFL as soon as sports come back, because we've been on that hiatus for so long.
Like, from all sports,
sports fans have not been able to get their fix lately.
But they're not getting the College World Series this month. They didn't get the Final Four back in March or April, whenever that was. So yeah, they've been eating their sports.
You're going to have a lot of viewers and you're going to have a lot of attention, and it's going to be really interesting to see. I don't watch the NFL personally. I could care less. I have to watch the Super Bowl every year because I work in the video world. So I have to make sure that my equipment is playing it. That's the only time I ever catch football. But I tell you what, I am watching the first game that I can. I'm watching first televised game because I want to see. I'm going to be watching the game and Twitter right next to each other. As soon as that first player kneels down, which I really hope that they do, because they need to call NFL out. They need to call them out on this crap. It's like, you can say this stuff, but I'm going to call your, like, if it's a bluff, they're going to call your bluff, and I really want to see it.
Yeah.
I really
want to see it. Well, we'll see. We'll see. So that was an interesting story that came over the weekend.
Yeah.
Let's continue on here. Oh, yeah. So we talked about Becky last week.
We did a trailer reaction, too. Our first trailer reaction of...
we tried that out.
Not of 2020, was it? Was that our first trailer reaction of 2020?
I mean, unless we did one really early in the year, it might have been. You might have to scroll back. I mean, unless we did something in February or January, I don't know.
I'm going to have to take a peek real quick.
Well, while you do that, so I went ahead and saw this movie over the weekend. We were given our... Hey, would you calm down over there?
Stop. It was the dog, not my cat this time. Always disruptive. So, scrolling back in our history.
I gotta separate them.
While you're breaking up that fight, just kind of going back in history here. Our last trailer reaction was Mulan in December of last year.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, that was in December, so it was.
So that was our first trailer reaction that we've done this year so far. 6 months.
Well, trailers are starting to come back.
Yeah, so. We're starting to see content again. But yeah, that was 6 months.
Why am I doing this?
6 months of no, of none of our primary content type.
We talked about Becky in the last podcast, and I went ahead and saw it after we had all those Home Alone references and whatnot.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, well, it is what the trailer looked like. In fact, there was that one scene of the trailer where she's pulling the line and she's creating a little thing on the dock. That is the only kind of traps part of the movie. The rest of the movie is just this girl brutally murdering some racists. And it is intense.
Could not have been timed better.
Yeah. I mean, there's other things that probably could have been. The movie... okay.
Sure.
I'm not going to spoil the movie because I want people to see this. For the majority of the movie, they play it pretty serious. It starts off with two storylines. First, you got Becky's storyline. Her mom died. She's a very rebellious teen right now. Her dad is dating some other woman. They're talking about possibly selling the family cabin on the lake, and she is pissed. She's got major anger issues. At the same time, Kevin James is kind of like the father of a small sect of racists, and they break out of prison. And of course, the first person they kill in the movie is a black guy, and it probably didn't need, but it was like they had to show you they were racist by killing a minority, and then the rest of the people they kill in the movie are white. But I'm pretty sure the major swastika on the back of his head was enough for us to
say,
know that he was a racist.
Like, we saw that tattoo in the trailer. The context was kind of there already.
It was. So that was a little like on the nose. And I was like, okay, we didn't really need that, but okay. But I mean, for the majority of the movie, he plays it straight, man. Just like he does on his YouTube channel. He delivers the lines that he was given. He's really serious about it. He's got the face of a racist. He's got the tone of a racist. he plays it well, man. And he's got a band of brothers that look to him as the father figure, despite him being the shortest one of the group. He's got this mountain of a guy from the, he used to be a wrestler for the WWE that's on his team. That's just a mountain. And they all look to him as a father figure. And they come to the lake house looking for this key that is in the basement for some reason. And Becky, being the, you know, being the rebellious teen that she is playing out in the woods and not wanting to spend time with family. Meanwhile, her family is being tortured by these racists because they can't find the key. And that's the premise of the movie. And Becky has the key, and Becky is pissed, and this is the outlet that she needed. And she just kills people like crazy. This is one of the ways she kills somebody. And I'm telling you, man, it was intense. It was intense. There was a couple scenes that were like, okay, it was a little over the top, kind of brought me out of it a little bit. But for the most part, this was a thriller. This was a home invasion thriller. And unlike Macaulay Culkin, she did not take prisoners. She did not injure people. She went for the kill every single time. And it was very intense.
So an interesting thing here, the guy who you're talking about, the mountain of a man, his name is Robert. Now, I know he's French, so I'm going to assume that it's Maillet, but it's M-A-I-L-L-E-T.
Yeah.
But he was known as the Acadian Giant. He is actually the same guy who played the super huge dude that Robert Downey Jr. fought in Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. Right.
And
right.
He was also like the super giant freak in 300 that Leonidas yes. faces off against.
So, yes. And his name in this movie is Apex.
Okay. Pretty
as an apex predator. Yeah. It's a pretty intense movie. There's a couple of things that also are a little like
also in Pacific yeah. Rim.
Oh, that's right. He was
that
yeah.
he was that dude, the blonde dude.
Yeah. So
I'm really glad yeah. that it came out really good, because I think the big thing when we watched the trailer was that it kind of seemed like the movie didn't have a direction right off of the bat. Like it like mm-hmm. like that weird line where it almost seemed like Kevin was trying to like push a joke, but it mm-hmm. wasn't really funny at all.
Oh no, he sells it in the movie.
He
yeah.
does sell it in the movie. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a comedic effect to it at all, or anything like that, or is it?
There is
or
not.
Do they just do straight up thriller through the whole thing?
It's straight up thriller.
That's good. I like seeing that. I like seeing him branch out that like that.
But here's the thing: at some point, you do, like I really enjoyed the movie. But about halfway through, I'm like, you know, the Kevin James, this is what he is the mastermind of the movie. He has been planning their escape for years. He's been planning to get them to this house, to get this key. This key, we don't know what the key is. It opens up something, some racist box somewhere. I don't know, racist Pandora's box. he says the way he's describing it to the family is that it's going to benefit all races. But you know, it's for us to have. And he's thought of everything. He's thought of everything, but he can't seem to wrap his head around an angry teenage girl. And his bad guys, as intimidating as they are in the beginning of the film, after she kills off a few of them, you're just like, okay, they're starting to become less scary. Like, because she is just, she's just killing all of them. And no, she's not a genetic experiment. No, she's not Hannah. She wasn't raised in the Siberian wilderness and trained by assassins. She's just an angry teenage girl who's mad at her dad and just wants to kill these guys to release some rage. Like, I want to see the sequel of this movie where we show all of the like therapy she has to go through, because otherwise she's going to just become a serial killer. Like, this is Dexter Jr. right here. She is like, she's crazy. She is literally crazy. I mean, she's got the crazy eyes and everything. And there's a couple of the things in this film that was like, I think it was meant to be like, but it came off unintentionally funny or yeah. like over the top. So there's a couple things like that. But for the most part, I did enjoy it. And obviously, they do a good job of showing you that these guys aren't guys you should feel bad for. They're racist. They're very vocal about how racist they are. And, you know, who doesn't like seeing a good old Let's Kill the Racist movie?
So just out of curiosity, I really wanted to know. I searched the youngest serial killer just to see the connection. It was apparently Jesse Harding Pomeroy, born November 29th of 1859, died September 29th, 1932. He's a convicted American murderer and the youngest person in the history of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to be convicted of murder in the first degree. He's found guilty by a jury trial held in the Supreme Judicial Court, blah, 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 blah. Two confirmed victims suspected to be 9 or more than 10. His nicknames were the Boston Boy Fiend, the Boy Torturer, the Demon, and the Red Devil. From 1871 to 1872, there were reports that several young boys were individually enticed to remote areas and attacked by a slightly older boy. However, no one was ever arrested. The attacks were noteworthy because of the extreme amount of brutality used by the assailant. The young boys were beaten with a fist.
It's getting dark.
The young boys were beaten with a fist and a belt, and in at least two of the attacks, a knife. Some boys were physically scarred permanently.
Okay.
This is
getting dark.
So yeah, like
Well,
she's certainly capable, but that guy killed younger kids. This chick sounds like she's killing hardened criminals.
It's right, and it's like think about how cool Hit Girl was in Kick-Ass, right? But she was young. But at some point, you were just like, what? You know, this girl is way too brutal for her age. And again, she was trained by a dude that he was a vigilante that killed people. This girl, I mean, she's just angry. And then by the end of the film, you're like, she is drenched in she's got a, you know, a body count to her name by the end of this film. And you're like, what? Is her life going to be after this? You know, I need a sequel just for that. And if it's just a drama or if it's a straight up horror film and she's the villain, I wouldn't be surprised. Cause she is like, she's intense. So anyway, I was pleasantly entertained. If you want to see a good thriller, it's a slasher film, sure. Except you're rooting for the slasher. And that is this girl. So yeah. I recommend it.
I mean, I can get into that.
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Off of your recommendation, I might give it a shot. But everybody knows I'm not really into like the whole thrasher genre.
Well, it's not a horror movie. It's not. No. It's more of a get 'em up, kill 'em up type film. Oh, and Redbox was one of those movies that had like 10. Logos at the beginning of it, and half of them I didn't recognize, but Redbox was one of them. So Redbox helped make this movie, which was interesting.
Did they help make the movie, or did they throw some money at it?
Well, they threw some money at it, but so yeah, I mean, so in some degree, but yeah. I don't know how much this girl has been in other things, but I really liked her. Is this like an Oscar performance for her, or an Oscar performance for Kevin James? Is this like what American History X was for who am I thinking of? For Ed oh gosh.
Oh man. Norton.
Ed Norton?
Edward Norton.
No, it's not. But he gives his all to it and she gives her all to it. And again, I couldn't recommend it more. I really enjoyed it. So yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm into it. I'll probably give it a shot. I'll probably give it a shot because it sounds like it might be that level of entertainment. Speaking of which, Becky was actually showing in drive-thrus, which we thought was pretty interesting.
I thought that was kind of cool. It says theaters, drive-ins, digital, VOD, down at the bottom of the poster. Yeah. How many posters from the last 10 years had drive-ins? on the boat. That's one of the coolest things. I want this poster just for that.
You know, I'm ready for them to make a comeback.
They're making a comeback.
But another film that was doing pretty damn good was The Wretched. And it was actually the article that you linked for our show notes was IFC's horror movie The Wretched passed the 1 million mark after a month of drive-in movie theater buzz.
Yeah, which, and this is right up your alley. I can just tell that this is something that would watch.
Yeah, I'm totally after this one here. It's like, I mean, I'm into it. Like, I would love to see drive-ins jump in because, like, something that we've talked about with movie theaters before is that they need to kind of have they need to come up with something extra, especially coming after all of this stuff, because there's going to be a lot of people who are reluctant to go and see films in a theater around people. And honestly, there's some things where tapping into the nostalgia of it is, sure, it can be the main feature of it, but if you're like bringing two levels of technology together to that degree, first of all, the last drive-in movie that I saw was, it was Space Cowboys, and it was after it with with Tommy Lee Jones and all them. There was the drive-in that we went to, they had two screens that were facing in opposite directions. So the kids could you could have the kids like sitting in the back, or like you could like sit them in the trunk and they could watch something in the front, and then the parents could watch something completely different. It's a brilliant system because I can tell you, when I'm a parent, there's going to be some child specific films that I'm not going to be able to sit through comfortably. especially after like just seeing some clips of the Emoji Movie, I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I want to sit through crap like that. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting. But the technology was, this was quite a while ago. The technology wasn't anywhere near as good in quality as it is now. I was like, I can only imagine the stuff that could be implemented for something like that to make it just like a bomb ass experience. I mean, that was the only drive-in movie theater experience that I had at the time. But there was something about it. I was like, this is really cool. And I know that there's some places around here in Omaha that were showing like classic films in a in a drive-through setting, but it wasn't
setting.
It was close to a drive-through setting. It wasn't like an official drive-in or anything like that.
Although there is official drive-in being made out
I heard about that.
By Waterloo. They're doing it in a cornfield, which I'm excited for. Because I have seen some of these makeshift drive-ins, and some of them were just kind of like, they draped a giant sheet over the side of a Target, and then everybody parked in the thing. And that's kind of cool, but you know, the thing with the cars is, I mean, it's a giant field that you're bringing all these cars to. So, you know, you need a giant screen. And we used to have one over in Council Bluffs, and I remember it was gorgeous. And you need that giant screen. You know, it's like you need it like IMAX size in order to be big enough to really, you know, make it worthwhile. And that's what they're building out there, and I'm excited for it. But the fact that this movie is getting praised for passing the $1 million mark after a strong drive-in theater buzz, that is, it really shows you how much the industry has changed this year. I mean, it's the article that we were talking about. Indie film took in $162,000 at 95 sites over the weekend. It debuted at just 11 drive-ins on May 1st, and it's actually it's breaking records. It is the first movie to be the top film of the weekend for six consecutive weekends since Avatar back in 2009. That's so crazy.
Sorry, Nolan and Tenet.
Tenet could still do it.
Oh, yeah.
Can you believe that? That is insane. And it's awesome. And it's crazy how small passing the $1 million. Now, they're calling this a low budget feature, although I can't find anywhere where the budget's listed. So who knows if they're making money on this or not. But it's crazy how the $1 million milestone is so big right now. when it's you know, it's the smallest of milestones everywhere else. You know, every other time we're talking about box office stuff.
Man, I gotta find the budget now, because like,
dude, so... I spent like 15 minutes today trying to find it. I couldn't find it anywhere. Like, everybody refers to it as a low budget film, but I can't seem to find the actual budget.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a notorious thing in horror films, is that you can make really good horror films with really low budgets. Which, oh man, I thought I had it there for a second, but yeah, box office opening weekend USA was May 3rd, $65,908. Gross in the USA is 1.1 million right now, according to IMDb. And the thing is that it's not even getting the best rating on IMDb right now. It's sitting at a 5.8. And it's available to rent on Amazon now too. So if you didn't get a chance to go out and check it out, you can definitely jump
this,
in there.
This box office analyst with Exhibitor Relations, Jeff Brock, has a quote here. He said, a studio like Warner Brothers can't take chances like this because they'd lose money even if drive-ins were packed. There's not much expected for a film like The Wretched, but if it gets to $1 million, this was last week, if it gets to $1 million, it's like another studio getting to $100 million. So it's a big deal considering how small of the audience it is and how limited, you know, theaters are right now. So. Yeah, good job.
Yeah,
good job,
no kidding.
Wretched.
And honestly, like, I would love for this to be an example of what drive-in theaters can do, because, yeah, you don't need a lot of them. Like, the numbers do not have to be, like, so you're not needing to open up a chain where you've got, like, we're here in Omaha, how many theaters do we have just in the surrounding area? Like,
so,
you know,
many.
Like, within, like, a 20-minute driving radius, I can't even list how many there actually
at
are.
At least 10, yeah.
At least 10. And I mean, if you had like a 10 to 1 ratio for drive-in theaters, perfectly fine.
Right.
Like you don't need a lot, because like, again, like they'd be able to show movies that like, there'd be that appeal. They're tapping into that nostalgia. So showing the older films that were very popular during those drive-in movie theater days would be really interesting. I cannot tell you how fast I would be the first vehicle in line to check out any of the original Star Wars trilogy if they were showing those in a drive-thru.
Could you imagine?
Dude, that'd be so cool. And with the technology that we have now, so you're dealing, there's cameras out now that are recording up to 8K. I can imagine that the upscaling that is capable on some like higher budget cinema films is actually going to be pretty good. A lot of cinema cameras recording around, like even if they're outputting at 4K, they might be recording as low as maybe even 5K, which is still super, super good. So, yep. I mean, honestly, the video quality, you have the potential of being absolutely amazing. There are pocket projectors that can produce on like 100-inch screens in startling quality. And so the video quality technology is definitely there. And then audio capabilities. You've got a lot of opportunities as far as, you could have them tie it into an app on their phone, and then that hooks into the Bluetooth in the car. I mean, as long as you can adjust for latency appropriately, you can have very good sound quality in there as well. Instead of, like the drive-thru that I went to, they were actually broadcasting them through speakers that were at the theater, but there were also, you could actually tune into the radio. And
they had a specific radio station that they were broadcasting out to, like an AM frequency.
Yeah, but even radio technology has moved forward quite a bit, and so like you could do that with minimal to zero interference, and have incredibly good sound quality. I mean,
Doug Holmes, it would be a great time
to check this stuff out.
Doug's listening to us. We know him from Grand Island. He runs the Grand Theater down there.
Welcome, sir.
And he's saying one of the problems for traditional theaters is the payback to the studios for ticket sales. We make our money on concessions, and then Disney movies take in very little revenue from ticket sales, for us at least. So we did kind of talk about that last week when we were talking about Cinemark opening up their theaters and not requiring members to wear masks because, you know, they're trying to get those concession sales. I'll be interested.
I'm not taking a mask off to eat popcorn and then putting it right back on after a handful.
Right.
Like,
right.
Nobody'd want to do that. So that, yeah, that was a critical thing.
So I'll be interested, Doug, if the Grand Theater follows that or if you guys are going to stay closed for a while. I know Grand Island has the Grand Theater, which is a one screen, kind of a retro style theater that they've had. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been there since the beginning of the town, and then they have the theater in the mall as well. So I'll be interested what you guys decide to do on that. But at least for now, this is kind of encouraging. This is kind of, it's kind of cool to see a little dog do well. And I'm sure Unhinged wanted to be that little dog, but right now the Wretched is beating them to the punch. So good job.
And I love seeing like the opportunity for like different methods of like intaking media becoming popular again. Like, like I love the idea of having a regular drive-in theater around here, because that'd be a cool thing to do, to go and do it. It's another thing to add to the repertoire of a lot of great things that you can do around here. Yeah. And I think more places should do that. We're having a meeting tomorrow about reopening. Well, I hope that meeting goes well. I hope it goes smooth and everybody can like agree on some like safe practices to get everything up and going again.
Good luck on that. I love the Grand Theater. It's a great place. All right. Well, we're finally to it, man. We're finally to season 6, and I have been waiting so long for this because I binged the crap out of this, and all this time that I was binging the crap out of the Clone Wars, I thought you had watched everything up into the newest season, and that was wrong. You had watched everything to season 5, and you had not seen season 6. Through season 5, right. You had not seen the sixth season, the Lost Missions.
This was my first time seeing season 6. I think I might have stated in the past that I had seen most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or that I had seen everything up to that, but like that was incorrect, because as soon as I came to the first episode of season 6, I didn't recognize it.
Yeah,
nothing rang out in my mind, which I believe was the chip. I believe that was the microchip story arc, wasn't it?
Was that the first one?
I think so. I think that was when Fives was...
Yes. It was.
The Order 66 protocol seemed to have gotten triggered by a damaged... God, what did they call it?
It was like a behavioral chip.
Yeah. It was a retention of that order. Which is something that was kind of like... It was obviously an episodal arc that was plugging the hole... That was the plot hole that was Order 66. And like, how are these clones just immediately going to betray everybody? Because like we've seen throughout the entire series that there were personal connections that were made, and there was a lot of valor that was.
Was it really a plot hole? Because in the movies, we knew that this army had been created behind the Jedi's back. The Senator,
anyway.
Palpatine, well, I mean, when it was first discovered, Kenobi was there and was like, what's up with this place? We never ordered this army. And the Jedi Council was like, we had no knowledge of this army. And so, I mean, from there, you knew that Palpatine and his forces and Count Dooku and everything had commissioned these. So I don't think it was a plot hole. I think they just never, like, straight out said, oh, yeah, and we put something in their heads so that, this would happen.
It wasn't necessarily a plot hole as to how the army came about, but it was more about like just how easy of a turn it was for them. And I'm not talking about throughout the films.
thanks, Josh. You're funny.
Specifically throughout the series of the Clone Wars, when we're seeing all these connections being made and we're becoming connected with these clone troopers.
Right.
And then like having to contemplate the thought of them just being like, all right, Palpatine said 66. Let's fucking wipe him out now.
Right.
That was kind of hard to comprehend. And honestly, if I had had to guess why that would have been so simple, like as soon as we saw that was what was going on, I think it was like I think it was like halfway into the second episode of the arc. I was like, all right, they're going with some sort of like mind override or something like that with the clones. And yeah, I mean, it was I guess I can't say perfectly, but for the most part, it absolutely explains why the clones would be like they are. And then I think it kind of revealed some other stuff as to a spoiler that I actually ran into when seeing an ad for Rebels, or it was an article for Rebels that I had scrolled by on Facebook, and it just kind of like it was in the tagline, and it had a picture of one of the clone troopers, much older, and I was like, well, damn it.
But we'll talk more about Rebels later.
But it also explains that little spoiler that I had there as to why, because we have Fives who actually decides, you know what, I'm not taking this chance. Remove this chip,
just
get rid of it.
And he
broke a shitload of protocols to do it, and
nobody will listen to him. And he's being hunted by his own guys because the other stormtroopers are like, okay, clearly he's defective or something like that. I mean, I felt for him. Because he was, like, trying to convince people, even the Jedi, he was like, listen to me, this is not right, you know, and the Jedi were just listening to the people of that, of, you know, that run the labs on Kamino, and they're just like, you know, guys, he's just freaking out about nothing.
It was particularly infuriating, because Shaak Ti is not a dumbass Jedi, like, she was very highly regarded on the council, and so to see her just be like, at first, like, there were some times where it seemed like she was going to kind of jump in there and be like, you know what, I'm going to listen to this clone trooper. We'll give him the option. We'll see what happens. But then you've also got the Kaminoan doctor, who's a real shitbag.
Yes.
And, the Kaminoans in general seem, or at least their leadership, and the people who were really deep on this plot are a bunch of shitbags.
It's who they were reporting to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which makes sense. Somebody's got to... Like, Sifo Dyas didn't pay the bill in, like, one lump sum. It's like, who's been paying for these guys? Sidious. Palpatine.
Well,
he's going to have some say in what goes on from there on out.
It's that story trope of, you know, if they just had a chance to sit down and explain everything. But I think the fact was that, for the most part, and at least in the beginning, when Fives tried to explain something, you know, it was broken sentences. He was still trying to make sense of it all. So it wasn't
didn't have
that
a lot of proof yet either.
Yeah, it wasn't that Shaak Ti was like just like ignoring him. It was, and she did kind of eventually like say, okay, we're gonna figure this out. You know, we're not just gonna let the Kaminos wipe this thing. But Fives had to do some work to get to that point, and he had to disobey a lot of orders to get to that point. But I was so happy.
Droid with him.
This was a hell of a way to start the season, though. Like, oh my gosh, as soon as I realized what was going on, I mean, as soon as, what's his name, who was the trooper that killed the Jedi, Tup, as soon as he did that, I was like, oh my god, here we go. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. This is what I've been hoping for the whole series. And it was a hell of an arc to start off the show. And then when it was done, you're like, okay, it was just, you know, it was handled enough so that the people wouldn't pay any more attention to it. Because clearly, you know, things happen later on. And I was like, well, how are they going to do this? Are they going to discover it? Or is it going to be wiped under the rug or what?
It kind of got stuck to staying as an isolated incident. And like throughout the rest of the series, we don't see Fives again, because like, as it was stated, these were like the lost missions. And so, like, I didn't look into it like I normally don't. I didn't look into like the deep cut or anything like that, because I didn't want to like find out anything else. But like, just by saying that they're lost missions, it almost feels like these were like cut from the seasons that they were going to be in.
Yeah, I don't know if that was the case or not, but whatever it was, these were the episodes that played on Netflix, and it was when Netflix picked up the show, and they kind of, it was kind of like a, let's throw a couple more out there to kind of finish this off. And I knew that you had not seen this season when we spoke about season 5, and you were saying, I'm looking forward to seeing what Ahsoka does in the next season, because she's not in this season.
I remember you kind of grimacing at me, be like, oh, I don't know if you're gonna like it, but like, and she's then not I didn't in see this season. I didn't see at her all. At all. Well, I mean, the vision of her that Yoda has in his arc,
the vision, yeah. But I mean,
beyond that,
no, I could
I was
only
kinda,
imagine.
I was pretty irritated that we didn't get to see anything there.
But I could only imagine if that watching this when it was live, and then the end of this season was technically the end of the show until this year. I mean, how infuriating that would be that you had the most prominent character of this series wasn't in the final season.
You would hope that there'd be like another piece of media, like a separate media or like a book series or something like that that Ahsoka would end up getting. Well, if the season right after one of my favorite characters had just disappeared and she didn't make a single fucking appearance, I'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna need some more context of that character now. Yeah, that was pretty irritating.
So we talked about the first arc. The second arc of the show was classic George Lucas Star Wars, because, you know, what did George Lucas bring us in the prequels? He brought us politics. And what did he bring us in? What's exciting and new to bring to Clone Wars? Banking. And so that's what the next arc was all about, was banking. And it was actually kind of entertaining. Like, it was where does the money go for Owen? Who looks over it and everything?
So honestly, I mean, the arc, even the political arcs in the show are somewhat interesting as long as they don't have Binks in them.
right.
But I mean, it was kind of like a nifty little look into the banking clan, because like before the Clone Wars, the only thing that we had seen was a line from one of the banking clan members in the Clone Wars saying, "The banking clan will sign your treaty." That was it. And we didn't hear anything else about him in the films or anything like that. And then, to find out, I mean, it kind of reminded me of like the Iron Bank from Game of Thrones, where they're like just this neutral party. They have all the money. They have control of all the funds and
neutral.
Neutral. Mm-hmm. Like it felt oddly familiar to that. I don't, honestly, I think this particular sect of Clone Wars came out after, that piece of, after that part of Game of Thrones, to where that reference was made. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm not sure either.
But it doesn't really matter, because it was obviously completely different.
This came out in 2014, so possible. But yeah, possible. 2014 was when the season came out.
It wasn't the most interesting, but it also wasn't the most uninteresting set of episodes out of the show.
Oh yeah, I was still entertained. I thought it was still good.
It still worked out pretty well. Mm-hmm. But the next two arcs. Like the final two arcs were easily, they were excellent.
The Jar Jar Binks one.
That was kind of what was upsetting, is that it didn't have anything to do with Jar Jar. It was specifically around Mace Windu.
Yeah,
and just I didn't get enough of him kicking ass through the first five seasons, and like he finally gets his own story. And he has to fucking tag along with Jar Jar Binks, which could only, like, who else could annoy him any further than that? Right. And then seeing this race of people who are fucking ripping the life, the force out of people, out of living beings, and manifesting it. So fucking Mother Talzin, who shows back up again.
Yeah, that dark magic shit.
Can do whatever the hell she was going to end up doing with it. Mm-hmm. That was insane. I mean, it was just insane. I thought it, like, as far as like lore wise, it was a very interesting episode to me, which is kind of a factor that comes into play in every piece of Star Wars media that I intake, is how is the lore affected, or how is the lore added to by this particular piece of media? And that particular arc and Yoda's arc were especially interesting to me, because like the cosmic side of things and like the real different applications of the Force, I find incredibly interesting in the Star Wars universe, because it's such a mixed bag of what you could do with it. Right. And for the most part, the people who produce Star Wars stuff have kept it pretty restrained as far as what it can do. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as the sequel trilogy and being able to pass physical matter through the Force and stuff like that, that's a little bit shaky, but still not so far outside of the realm of possibility to where you're just like, whatever, because it didn't seem like they had a huge amount of control over it until Rise of Skywalker. And at that point, they still only passed like a lightsaber to each other. So it's like, eh, yeah, whatever. But yeah, being able, like, seeing that Mother Talzin is like, it was her specific line where she's saying, "The Force does not come naturally to me."
Right.
It's like, I had to, like, she had to, like, learn to manipulate it in a completely different way, which is where we end up coming up with the dark magic used by the Night Sisters. And throughout this, I mean, we saw them raising the dead to become zombie armies and shit like that. Like, we ain't seen that shit through any other Jedi. Like, it was,
right.
It was crazy.
Everything surrounding them was really interesting in this show, and I was glad that she got to come back and have like a capper episode, because I thought she was dead. But yeah,
we had every reason to believe too. So like,
right.
that was really creepy that she just showed up again.
Right, and then Jar Jar, like, again, like, messing shit up, but somehow pulls it off. I mean, that's just it's typical Jar Jar, but he pulls it off and saves the day, and even impresses Mace Windu a bit. But, yeah, that was...
Or at least gets Mace Windu to the point where he will tolerate Jar Jar.
Yeah, I can't remember what the line was, but he was like, you know, something like, maybe there's a little bit more to you than meets the eye. But
that might have been the exact line, actually. But.
Yeah, something like that. But then, right before the final arc with Yoda, there was one episode in between these two called The Lost One, and it focused it on Sifo Dyas.
Well, I mean, that was kind of part of the arc. It was kind of like the trigger to that arc.
Yeah.
What do you want to say about it?
I just thought it was interesting because they were, you know, they had learned about the Sifo Dyas when they were investigating this clone army and who was this person. And then, you know, connecting this person with Dooku and this Darth Sidious. And it was like they were getting really close to finding out, you know, that Palpatine is Darth Sidious. And it was just kind of this investigation that you're just like, come on, just get there. Just connect the dots. And you know they're not going to connect the dots because, you know, episode 3. But it was interesting. I just, you know, we hadn't really got too much investigation from the Jedi into Sifo Dyas and into Dooku and into Darth Sidious in the show. And this little episode gave that little, you know, that little piece into it, which I appreciated.
Well, that was one thing that really infuriated me about episode 2 is that when they brought up Sifo Dyas, it was almost in passing.
Yeah,
like, it was almost like
what?
Like
who's
never
what?
Like if you hadn't read any like books or anything, I don't even know if he appeared in books or comics as far as context goes. So they just brought up this random Jedi out of nowhere. You're like, I have no fucking idea who that is.
You gonna like, spell that he, out a he, bit more? Or,
is
yeah,
he important? Right. Was he on the council? How'd he die? Mm-hmm. There was some confusion as to maybe that was an alternate name for Qui-Gon Jinn or something like that, and they just didn't fix that.
I thought it was an alternate name for Dooku for a while, and then I was
yeah,
like, what?
It was really weird. Which was another thing that they brought up, that they had no idea that that Dooku was Darth Tyrannus.
Right.
Which is probably, like, the weakest Darth name that they'd come up with at that point.
I know.
I was like, really? Tyrannus? You really? Yeah.
You're getting close.
Your creativity was really bubbling there, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was really interesting to see Anakin and Obi-Wan finally learn that. Piece of information and get another pretty sweet duel with Dooku and have Obi-Wan chuck Anakin like 400 feet over to a fucking ship in the middle of the air. Like, and they had done it before because he was like, hey, I'll give you a throw or I'll give you a toss or something like that.
Right.
I don't know why, but that was just like, as soon as they saw that, I was laughing. I was just like, that's just so funny because it's such a, like a brotherly bond moment for those two characters. And it was so small. It was so small, but it was so nice.
Well, and it was the prelude to their duel at the beginning of episode 3. So it just felt like that little bit more connector piece, which, you know, was always something that I was like, okay, you did that well, you know. And again, we've talked about this. It justified the prequels a little more, fleshed it out, and it made the prequels make sense a little bit more.
You know, it makes Revenge of the Sith make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Doesn't, in my opinion, it still doesn't do jack shit to try and save episode one or two. I feel like, I'm not going to go into,
I know we could talk about that for a long time.
I could go on and on for that. But then, that was kind of like a loose starter to Yoda's arc, who suddenly starts hearing the voice of Qui-Gon Jinn, which wasn't a big shocker to us because they had Obi-Wan and Anakin had seen that on Mortis, and
but we weren't sure if that was real or if that was that dark side dude that was messing with him.
Yeah, the boy.
Which I think this kind of verifies that it was because Yoda was shocked. He was like, he didn't understand what was going on. So I think this was the first time it was legit, because it seemed like Yoda didn't even realize this was possible through the Force.
Sure, but at the same time, I feel like that was also real. But the thing that irritated me about it a little bit was just kind of like the way they play it. Like, it would have been better if Obi-Wan hadn't heard it on Mortis. Because in episode 3, when right after the temple had been attacked, the purge had started, Yoda reveals to Obi-Wan that Qui-Gon had found his way through to the living Force.
Mm-hmm.
And Obi-Wan is like shocked. He's like, right. I can't believe this. Like,
I thought of that when I first saw that episode, that earlier episode when, you know, on Mortis. So yeah, it didn't make sense.
That played through my head, like that entire arc. Like every single time. And I mean, in all fairness, they did bring Liam Neeson back to voice the character again, which is great. Mm-hmm.
But this worked better as a setup for that. Talking to him, setting up Dagobah, all that stuff.
But the only thing that messes with that is that particular scene in Revenge of the Sith with Obi-Wan, where he's completely shocked that this had happened.
Sure.
Unless
Yoda didn't tell him, because at the end of this, it didn't seem like Yoda like was like, hey, I got to tell everybody. It seemed like he was keeping a lot of this to himself.
Yeah, he didn't reveal shit.
Right. But it was interesting. I mean, it started with Qui-Gon Jinn. And then Qui-Gon Jinn sent him to this kind of magical place where he was tested by the Force and everything.
It's not particularly the shock of who it was. It was the shock that it had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because throughout the arc, the beginning of the arc, Ki-Adi-Mundi is like, no, he's being manipulated by the Sith. Like he could be getting attacked. Dooku was his apprentice. They might have that connection that they need, which they do, right. Which Dooku and Sidious do end up exploiting.
Mm-hmm.
It for the majority of the arc, they make it very clear that a manifestation of his consciousness would have been impossible. That no Jedi had done that before. It's impossible. They don't know of any other way. They don't know that happening in any instance whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And then we find out that Yoda has to go through like a bunch of training. Qui-Gon didn't finish his, so he can't show himself. And I mean, I understand Yoda mastering it, because he's fucking Yoda. But him being able to like I even kind of understand Obi-Wan being able to do it. Luke was It made Luke's Force Ghost ability a little bit shaky for me, because like in The Last Jedi, like when Yoda shows up to him, he acted like he hadn't seen Yoda in a long time, like he hadn't had that interaction. So I doubt that, who had the time to pass that knowledge on to Luke for him to manifest his consciousness? But they made it seem like it was a lot more difficult to do this than the movies let on.
Right. It wasn't just something like all Jedi die and go to heaven, and then they are able to come down and be like Force ghosts whenever they want to. This definitely was like Yoda was the first time he was ever hearing about this. He had to go through trials. And then, you never see that with Obi-Wan, but you figure he goes out in the desert as a fairly, you know, middle-aged man. Next time you see him, he's an old man, so he probably learned it over time. But it was interesting to see all the things that Yoda has to go through and the trials and Darth Bane and a lot of
which was super cool to see Darth Bane, because he's another character from the KOTOR series that we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
The creator of the Rule of Two. Mm-hmm. The fact that they went to Moriband, which is actually which is also known as Korriban, which for you KOTOR players is again a reference to well, just for you Old Republic fans, that like I don't know why that those two names became associated with each other. I haven't looked that deep into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, for some reason it's Moriband in this era, and it's Korriban in the older. But yeah, like I found it a little bit weird that Yoda, well, I mean, he did kind of know it, but I would have hoped that Yoda had been a little bit more familiar with that stuff. Like, I wanted to see more Sith lore than what we got. We only got Darth Bane. I wanted to see a little bit more.
Yeah, but there was that confrontation at the end, you know, and sure, and the fights, sure. and I love that part where Yoda wakes up on the ship with like Skywalker and, you know, and the clones, and he's like, what's going on? You know, and they're like, what do you mean? This is your mission. And he's like, what, how'd I get here? And then they go in and it's a fight, and you know, Dooku's there and Darth Sidious is there. And, it was really cool. It was really well thought out.
This is your final boss level, Yoda. This is the, as far as like the Force is concerned, this is the final trial. This is what you need to do in order to be able to manifest your consciousness and become a Force ghost. And then
you saw the tragedy of it when he was kind of tempted to believe in the other side of it, which was when he was like in that garden and he saw everybody, you know, like Qui-Gon Jinn was still alive and Dooku
wasn't a dickhead.
Was just hanging out. You know, he was in regular clothes, not all dark and scary. And he was, everybody was laughing and having a good time. And it was like, that was a very sweet moment, but a tragic moment, because you knew that wasn't possible. And you knew that the people that were still alive were going to be dead in episode 3. And it was
really neat because they really gave that vulnerable side to Yoda. Like, he was finally given like, I don't want to say this because it sounds racist, but he was given like a human element. Like, he was shown to be that vulnerable, sentient being, if you want to call it. Like, he wasn't perfect. Like, there was always this assumption that Yoda was this beast mode Jedi who could do no wrong and had no faults. And then we finally saw like, no, not even Yoda. Not even Yoda. Not even the wisest is going to be able to handle everything perfectly.
Right.
And technically, he gave into that temptation to see that moment in the garden at the Jedi Temple, and then realized what was going on. He's like, no, I can't do this. And then made again. It was a vision, but still, like it was a very real moment for him. He was feeling real pain. He sacrifices himself, stops blocking Palpatine's lightning, so he can at least get Anakin to safety. Specifically the moment where he sees all the Jedi dead in the temple and Ahsoka dies in front of him, and he's like, I failed. Like, he breaks. Like, you hadn't seen that from Yoda before that, and it was really nice overall. This season asked just about as many questions as it answered for me as far as lore wise goes, but I don't know. I've still got another season to watch.
Well, I wanted to ask you because, you know, this season 6 ended, and it ended in 2014. So 6 years ago, people thought that this was the end. They weren't going to get any more Clone Wars. Granted, they got Rebels a few years later, and that kind of, you'll see that answers some things. But, this ended with Yoda back in that garden with the people that were still alive saying that, you know, whoever wins the Clone Wars, nobody wins. That was kind of the end to it. So I wanted to get your thoughts, because we talked in season 5 about how Ahsoka walking away was a fairly adequate ending to the show. Even though there's so much more that, you know, we got to see in this season, there's so much more we'll see in season 7. But what did you think? If you could choose between season 6 ending and season 5's ending, which one did you appreciate more?
Oh, season 5, for sure.
Okay. Did you wish she didn't get season six, or was season six at least, you know, supplementary enough that you could appreciate it?
So, if I had been, if I was to watch the series chronologically, like, that's the interesting thing. Like, that's some information that I want to know. I want to know where these episodes would have originally, would fall chronologically in the story. Mm-hmm. Because there wasn't, like, none of them are really necessarily dated. Because there were episodes through the original series before Ahsoka left where Ahsoka made no appearances. Those Jedi hadn't had missions on their own. It would have made sense for Yoda's arc to take place after Ahsoka had left, because she mm-hmm. very clearly stated that you said that I could come back and study to be a Jedi again.
Yeah.
And then specifically mentioned the arc of her being expelled. But the other two arcs, they could have gotten away with putting those in somewhere else. Or the other three arcs, they could have gotten away with putting them in.
They could have.
Into season five.
I think Anakin had one line in the beginning before those Jedi got killed, talking about how he missed his apprentice, or somebody said, oh, I heard you lost your apprentice. I mean, that could have been just added in later.
I must have missed that line.
That was in there. So, yeah.
If I had not seen any of season six's episodes and mm-hmm. they had ended at five, I still would have been okay. Mm-hmm. I like the supplement that season six ended up creating. And like I said, I was really interested in the lore, that they introduced, yeah. But I didn't need it in order to close the story out for me. I still maintain that I really would have been upset if there wasn't more Ahsoka in some form or fashion.
Well, you know, she's in season seven because she's all over the posters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the time I wouldn't have known that.
Right. Right.
So I still would have been really upset about that. And I would have been hoping for a comic or another show or a spinoff or something, including Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. There's a rumor going around right now that she is appearing, that Rosario Dawson is playing her in The Mandalorian's second season,
right.
which is pretty interesting. If that's true and it's confirmed, well, I guess just the fact that they've said it means that she doesn't die in season seven. So that kind of got spoiled.
You did read Rebels, so there's. It was Rebels.
I didn't read the article. I scrolled through enough of it to see. It was like a.
Which
like,
is why you like need a, to watch Rebels. We need to hurry up through season seven so you can watch Rebels.
Like, it was like some clickbait headline about Rex.
Yeah. Well,
and,
I mean.
Because, like, I don't remember specifically what it was, but it showed him bald. He had a white beard.
Mm-hmm.
And it said something about this is why Rex did something or whatever it was.
Yeah. We'll get into that later, but we got to remember that this season of Clone Wars came out in 2014 and Rebels came out in 2014. So Rebels was the sequel to this, but it just jumped. And so until we got season seven, Rebels was, and it did continue and answer some storylines just after a time jump. So that was interesting, but I had with me binging this, there were things in this season that I appreciated. And I don't know why they're called The Lost Missions, because they didn't feel like, you know, episodes that didn't make the cut for other ones. I thought that there was still enough in the majority of these episodes that were meat on the bone and that supplemented the show very well. And then season seven definitely gives us things that were missing from Rebels. So I don't know why it's called The Lost Missions. But
I feel like these would have been really cool, not as individual episodes, but if they had released them as mini movies and just edited the episodes together.
Oh, sure.
Given us that, I think that would have been kind of cool. Just as some epilogue stuff to the clone, to like kind of close up the Clone Wars before Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
I imagine that, I'm really excited to watch season seven now. And as you've said, we're going to break that down a little bit differently than we have. We're not going to review the whole season in an episode. We're going to split it up by the arcs that they go through.
Wait, really? Oh, I thought we were just going to spend a whole episode on the season and just dive real deep into the three arcs.
Well, I mean, we could do it. You said that you wanted it. It sounded like you said you wanted to do an episode per arc.
Oh, I don't know about that, man. I don't think there's enough content.
Well, to split it up, which will give me kind of like how we did here. So where we've got our other stories, and then we've got like this arc of season 7.
We'll see. I don't know. There's so much I got to talk about in season 7. I could talk. We could do a 2-hour special on that and just spend like 45 minutes on each arc because there's 3 arcs.
I mean, I'll talk Star Wars all damn day, man.
My question is, am I going to have to wait till you get back from camping to have you start watching season 7, or are you going to watch it on the road?
No. I won't be watching on the road because the majority of that vacation is, I'm going to try and stay away from technology and social media as much as I can.
Oh, that's good.
The only technology that I'm going to be taking is I am going to be editing some of the photos that I take while I'm out there, because this is also so I had followed this path that we're taking through to Yellowstone and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
Based off of a previous vacation that I took with my family about 10 years ago.
Oh, nice.
But it was before I had actually committed myself to photography and videography. Like, I didn't have the knowledge that I have now.
Mm-hmm.
Photography was not a career path that I was pursuing at the time. But I have really vivid memories of some really cool sites that we saw while we were out there, and I really want to go and see those again with the context that I have now. So the majority of this vacation is specifically me. Like, originally this was going to be just a landscape photography tour, so I could fill my website up with more prints,
right.
and hopefully get some print sales off of the vacation as well.
Right.
But a lot of it is also kind of like revisiting those sites that I saw and, taking proper photos, getting away from social media, getting away from, technology for a little while, kind of hitting the reset button a little bit.
Okay.
This is going to be the first vacation where I don't take my work phone with me as well. So I won't be able to be contacted by work at all either.
Nice. That's hard to do. So good on you.
Yeah. That one's the tough one.
Mm-hmm.
This one's kind of like a big unwind. So for this week up until Friday, I am going to try and, I will promise you that I will finish at least the first arc. So on our episode, so if you want to, on our episode on Thursday before I go, maybe we can talk about that first arc.
Ooh. Okay.
Am I free on Thursday?
Am I free on Thursday? I think I am. Yes. I got something. No, not in the evening. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, if you wanted to do it that way for our Thursday episode,
If I could just suggest you something, do not watch anything past the first arc before your camping trip. Just don't do it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay. But the first arc, sure. I'd love to talk to you about the first arc.
All right. I'll give you the first arc, and then I will shut down. I will stay away from Disney Plus for the rest of the week until I get back.
That sounds really nice. I'm so glad that you're doing that. Good on you. And I can't wait to hear about it when you get back.
I will tell you, though, if I want to take another vacation, I might try and grab myself some tickets for New York Comic Con and head up there for a weekend just to see how batshit crazy things are going to be.
I don't know, man. I don't know. We'll see. I'll
pop up there. I'll help you out with the booth.
Hey man,
are you going? I don't know if you said, like, are you gonna go?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I'm gonna pay for my invoice. Oh yeah, I mean, okay, because it is a rock and a hard place with me. If I don't go, I lose my chair, and
you lose book sales.
The small press section is the smallest section of that con, and if you lose your table, if you piss them off, or if you drop off, or you don't pay your invoice 1 year, you don't get back on that list. And it's always the show that I look forward to. It's the big, you know, this big show for me. So yeah, I'll be going. If it happens, I'll be there. I just got to figure out how.
I think it'll be interesting because this vacation cycle is like my big chunk of vacation time being taken.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have like a couple extra days that I get to use, and I have never been to New York before, ever.
Oh wow! Well, there you go.
So I think that the first time going to I've never been to a actual Comic-Con before. Like, I've
and
never
been
to one.
You could get in for free, and you could get in the you know, the vendor way, which is exhibitor way.
Shit. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Well, I was thinking about paying. I was thinking about paying my own way, but if you are going to throw in that hookup, I'll definitely help you out.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Say. All right.
Yeah. Absolutely. No. I will. I will guarantee you that I will. I'm gonna make that solid promise. I'm gonna have the first arc done before our episode on Thursday, so we can talk about that. I'll go on vacation. You'll see very little, if any, information from me at all. I'll probably just be posting photos that I finished editing when we're hanging out, like, because we have like one hotel room stay out of the entire week that we're gonna be gone. So I'll
and
have
I'll
one
leave you
point
be.
In time where I actually have Wi-Fi. So.
Maybe I'll have a guest post for the podcast while you're gone, but then...
there you go. Yeah, grab another interview with B. Kong, because I think he had a bunch of updates that you wanted to talk to him about.
I got my arcade from him, and all right. I haven't had time to really work on it yet, because I've got to set it up properly, so sure. Yeah, we'll do a follow-up on that, yeah.
I did talk to him about possibly grabbing mine.
Nice.
I got the email from him. I kind of went over the spreadsheet that he had. So
yeah,
I gotta get that going, because just the amount of N64 titles that he included on that now are like, I'm hooked.
I know.
I really want to play Star Fox on a fucking arcade cabinet. That's gonna be so
right,
cool.
Right. Well,
but yeah, until then, we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode. Mm-hmm. Nerf Herders, thank you for tuning into this episode. We appreciate the comments. We definitely want more. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, hit us up on social media. You can hit us up whenever. We are terribly bad about remembering to post to ask questions. So just throw something at us.
Just throw something.
Just
participate in the conversation like Doug and Josh did today. Like, so thank you.
I want to hear what you guys have to say about this, or suggest some suggest some topics. Ask some questions, respond to some stuff that we talked about here. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can comment in the YouTube comments below here. You can comment in the Facebook comments below here. You can find the audio-only version of this podcast and previous podcasts on anchor.fm, which will link you to all the other platforms that we are on. Mm-hmm. And hit the like button if you haven't already. Subscribe if you haven't already. And we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
See ya.